Welcome to the Sean Chandler Podcast, a place to talk movies and nerd culture way too much. Joining me, as always, is Griffin Schiller, and today we have a special guest, 3C himself, Chris Parker. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, Sean. Thank you so much for inviting me on. I respect what you and Griffin do. Got my own podcast, but once I heard you had one, I had to jump on here.
So excited to have you. Griffin, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. I got a very exciting email that I hope becomes a reality, so I'll just leave it at that.
Oh, mysterious. So hopefully next week we'll get to find out, and hopefully that will all play out nicely. I'm personally pretty stressed out right now. My wife was supposed to go to a meeting in Dallas yesterday. She was supposed to come back 6 hours later. Day and a half later, she hasn't returned yet, which has made for a little bit of a stressful little window of time for me, because they decided, no, let's not do one meeting. Let's do 2 days of meetings. And so that meant I'm on a single parent mode for 2 days and trying to watch the baby, record a podcast, keep all this stuff going. So thank you guys so much. If you guys, behind the scenes, there was all kinds of stress of rescheduling, trying to figure out when we can record all of this, and finally it's come together and we are able to talk movies way too much. With that said, let's go ahead and just dive into it. Today we're going to be talking mostly about Sonic the Hedgehog and video game movies. That's actually why I wanted Chris to join us, because I know he's really into that kind of thing. But another thing that dropped was our first glimpse at the new Bat suit. If you're listening on the audio version, be sure to head on over to your favorite podcast providers and leave a rating, leave a review. It helps us out, especially as we're launching, trying to get that early momentum. And with that said, let's get started talking about this bat suit. So Matt Reeves posted some test footage. It's kind of in like black and red, and you just kind of moves over the bat suit with the new score playing. Chris, what did you think about it?
So I thought it was a really cool suit, and especially the way they introduce it, especially in the movie community, it's been a long tradition. Once you get a new Batman movie, you do a bat suit reveal. You know, we had Zack Snyder do it with the black and white Ben Affleck suit, even going all the way back to Michael Keaton showing up in a magazine. It's a big deal, and the way he did it, I really liked. When it comes to the suit, I think from the neck down, I'm really digging it. I'm still holding out hopes for the cowl. I don't mind the leather, but I think the ears is what's going to make or break it for me. But overall, I'm digging the direction of what he's doing right now with it.
Griffin, how about you?
If this wasn't a family-friendly podcast, I'd probably give some thoughts on that cowl. But no.
you don't have to be too family-friendly. Just go, PG-13 is okay.
PG-13, okay. Well, you know, Robert Pattinson might be going into a sex dungeon later on. No, I really did love the first look, especially with Michael Giacchino's score over that. I thought it might be him, and it was, and it sounds very Batman, very different from what we've heard, but still Batman. The cowl looks great, especially when you see those pictures of them like taking out the red and making it the traditional like black and gray and whatnot. And anyone who is doubting Robert Pattinson really just needs to shut their mouths at this point. Yeah. The dude's got the perfect jawline. That jawline is complementing the cowl beautifully. And if those, like, if the symbol, I know people are speculating the symbol on his chest is supposed to be made out of the gun. If that's actually true, I think that's brilliant. If it's not true, whatever. But I just think it's a really interesting take on the bat suit that we haven't seen before. Holding out hope for the pointy ears, though.
Yeah. For me personally, I like a more simple bat suit. And so when I kind of see like the armored layered stuff, that's not kind of what I like when I like a bat, think of a bat suit. I really dug the simplicity of Batfleck, specifically Batman v Superman. That kind of, to me, you know, you can nitpick whether you like the size of the ears or stuff like that, but that general, the body type thing, or is it too bulky? Sure, we could, but the simplicity of the look of it, that's what I like in my bat suit. So my first inclination is to be like, this isn't the type of thing that I like out of a bat suit. I just, the armored look and metal plates or whatever it is, that's not my thing. Now, that's not going to stop the movie from being good. Matt Reeves, I'm so excited about that. The score, as you said, it's fantastic, while not sounding anything like what we've heard from a Batman theme before. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, Pattinson's head still looks, his neck and everything, he seems like a small guy in the suit. So I'm not doubting him as an actor and can he have the intensity, but I get nervous when I think, is this the guy that I believe can take out a room full of thugs? I'm not sure about.
I believe, Sean. I believe, and so you should believe.
Yeah. I'm always optimistic. I want to be convinced. So just for the next year and a half, I will allow you to keep convincing me. Any final thoughts on this one, Chris?
Well, Sean, I wanted to ask you, because Griffin brought it up, that rumor about, is the chest actually, you know, the gun piece? You know, I'm kind of leaning that it's not. I definitely believe it's some sort of gadget. If you zoom into the point, it looks like it might be a knife blade. What are your thoughts on what the chest emblem could be made out of, or what it'll have to do with the movie?
Yeah, I mean, looking at it, it looks so distinct, like something's going on there. I think it's was it the Kevin Smith line of comics where he wrote this kind of plot line about the emblem is the gun. And so that's where a lot of the speculation is coming from. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That first look at it, it looked kind of like a gun to me. I didn't zoom in. I didn't do any fancy stuff, but it seemed like from just a first look, it seemed kind of compelling to me. I'm leaning that way right now. That's where I'm at. Griffin, are you leaning that way?
No, I don't think so. I'm kind of with Chris. I'm with Chris to an extent. I don't think it's a gadget. I just think it's the way it just looks really homemade.
Yeah.
You know, and so like he just kind of like, you know, workshopped it together with some metal or whatever. I really have no clue, but I don't like if it turns out to be true. I think that makes for a really interesting character trait.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
And would help distinguish him from like literally like every other Batman. But like. You know, I'm not, I'll wait and see, you know?
Yeah. So makes from sense. There, let's move on to our main subject of the day, Sonic the Hedgehog and video game movies. So as we go into this, I know we have different takes on Sonic, the film itself, especially based off what you said last week, Griffin, on the podcast about this film. So, Griffin, you didn't like the movie very much. Can you give the quick version of why you didn't like the film?
Absolutely. But before I say that, do you want to give a quick shout out to Billie Eilish's No Time to Die song?
Sure. Real quick, we can talk about that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I was curious what you thought.
I listened to it, so I don't have anything to say, but if you want to.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I just want to say I was floored by it. I mean, if I had recorded myself listening to it for the first time, I was literally crying and had chills all over. Like, it was great. But some people are going to give her crap because it sounds like the Sam Smith one. It's really, like, slow. It's really methodical. I don't care. It sounds Bondian. The Hans Zimmer Orchestra is amazing. And I think if you look at the lyrics, they're probably some of my favorite lyrics out of the entire franchise just because it really plays into the character journey that he's going on and plays into the emotions. So it's super interesting. Love it. Haven't been able to stop listening to it. So I can't get enough of it.
Chris, have you given it a listen?
Oh, yeah. I thought it was really good. It's surprising coming from Billie Eilish. I do like her music, but I was expecting different. Heck, I even thought because Sam Mendes did get a little like backlash, everyone saying that he was trying to go too similar to the Adele version. I thought they went to Billie Eilish because they thought they would get a different sound. And we did get something similar. But like Griffin said, the lyrics attached to it and the feel, I really dug it.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. I think when you get people to do a Bond song, like, yes, you want it to be a Bond song, but you also want it to sound like that particular artist. So it's like, if you're going to get Billie Eilish, this is the song you're going to get because this sounds like Billie Eilish. So, like, I don't really know what people were expecting. It doesn't take away from the fact that the song sounds very Bondian and it's probably going to be amazing paired with visuals.
Yeah, I tend to like to wait until the movie. So that's kind of, I saw it, I was like, oh, I should check this out. And I was like, I'm going to hold back. I want to hold back and experience it as we get the epic opening credit sequence with the song. That's the way I want to experience it. So that's why I didn't listen to it. I'm glad that you guys did. With that said, moving on to
Sonic, our
main subject of the day, Sonic the Hedgehog. Yes. I had fun with it. I believe, Chris, you had fun with it?
Yes, I had fun with it.
Griffin, why did you not have fun with it? And then we're going to try and convince you should have more fun.
Man, I was even going to make a video. It was like, Sonic is not good. And then I was just like, you know, it's not even worth my effort. I just don't, like, is it the worst movie I've ever seen? No. But like, I have seen this movie time and time again done far better, I might add. If you want to compare like live action with cartoon characters sprinkled in there, compare it to like Looney Tunes Back in Action, which I think does this shtick far better than Sonic does, because the writing is witty. It's not like a bunch of, like, I get they're playing to a younger audience, but like I feel like it was dumbed down a little too much. It is reminiscent of like the 90s kind of road trip films, which that's fine. And like, I do enjoy Jim Carrey in it. Like, it's him going full blown like Ace Ventura mixed with The Mask mixed with, you know, it's just, yeah, it's Jim Carrey. But like, he doesn't even have that much screen time, I don't think. And like, that going to just see Jim Carrey isn't enough to warrant seeing the film. Also, I just got really annoyed with Sonic, and I found him to be kind of a jerk, especially when he's trying to guilt James Marsden into like not pursuing his dreams. I'm like, screw you, Sonic. Like, this man wants to go to San Francisco and save people and be a police officer, and you've met him for like 5 minutes and you're like, no, how dare you? How dare you follow your dreams? I was just like, What are we doing here? Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Some of the VFX were questionable, but obviously I can't really fault them given the time crunch they were under. Oh. But yeah, man, it just didn't work for me. Almost on any like level, really.
So, Chris, how about you? Yes. What, you had more fun with it than he did, obviously. So what did you do?
Now, the interesting part about this is a lot of Griffin's points I completely agree with, and I don't even like have an argument for it. To me, what I came out like, I just liked it was, one, for sure, Jim Carrey. Like I tweeted before, I saw the movie. It's been 6 years since I seen Jim Carrey in a theater. That was with the Dumb and Dumber sequel, and that's just too long for me to wait, being a big Jim Carrey fan. But as a Sonic fan as well, when you actually see the movie and you realize there were so many things that they were pushing towards fans, Easter eggs, and you get a sense that there was love and passion made for this, but you can't excuse that it is overlaid with this generic live action CGI hybrid that I, you know, like Hop or like the CGI Smurfs movie. But to me, the passion seeped through, and the what could potentially happen in the future is what really gave me optimism and wanting to see more out of this world. I agree, Griffin, on the egotistical, but that kind of is Sonic. He's very egomaniacal. I compare him to Kanye West a little bit. But I thought the movie tried balancing, you know, his loneliness in the world and the setup. As cheesy as it might have been, James Marsden, for sure. I even got those same vibes when Sonic was like, how could you not want to live your dream? It's okay, whatever.
Yeah, I was like, what? Like, what the heck? Like, I get Sonic's like a quippy kind of like, you know, snarky jerk at times, but I was like, that's like a deep cut. That's like a low blow there.
I guess my defense of that would be is that they set him up to be such a lonely character that is such a odd experience that has been his life of his Obi-Wan Kenobi has been killed off. He's been all alone. And so that's what sets up this scenario where he has that perspective where he treats him that way. And so I could forgive some of that stuff about him and his quirks because I understood why he was enjoying life so much. Even the road trip aspect, it's like, okay, this makes no sense that Sonic is riding shotgun in a car across the country. But they explain it through, he's this lonely person that wants a friend. He has a friend now. And so I could make some sense out of it. And I think the other one that – where I think this movie, you feel different about it if you have a different experience with it. And I think I'll kind of use that as a transition. Talking about the next subject, this movie was the largest opening for a video game movie ever from what I read. 70 million 4-day, about 60 million 3-day. So really nice numbers. And so the question is, why is that? Why did this movie make so much? And I think it's guys my age taking their kids to go see it. And so, like, I went to go see it, and everyone there, it was a 10-year-old kid, an 8-year-old kid, or two kids, and they're dressed up in their Sonic pajamas, their Sonic costume. And, like, my kids were running around the theater after it ended, like, I was about to say what happens in the post-credit scene, but they're so excited, screaming about what they saw in the post-credit scene, stuff like that. Then the next day, I went to go see Fantasy Island. Not recommended. Oh, boy. So try to torture myself. No. And God. I walk out of the theater at this exact same time, this theater across the hallway, Sonic let out, and it was a bunch of 40-year-old dudes with their 10-year-old kid walking out of it that just absolutely amped. And I think they knew that that's what the target audience was. They're trying to make a movie that would appeal to a kid. My kids loved it. Every kid I've heard from loved it. And that wouldn't drive guys my age crazy. And so that's what it, like, it perfectly does that. But I could see if you're in, like, your mid-20s, and you're like, you played Sonic games growing up too, so you have that nostalgia for Sonic, but you're not the target audience. You're too old, yeah, and you're too young to be the right, perfect target audience for it. I think perhaps that's even a little bit of, Griffin, why you didn't like it as much. But yeah, perhaps. That's my theory.
I think, like, oh, go ahead, sorry.
But I guess just to throw that back to you, why do you guys think it did so well, and what do you think about that?
I think for me, it's I guess it is geared towards a younger demographic, and I understand why it succeeded, because I think you're right. There's no kids films out right now, and so people are going to, like, yeah, take their kids to go see Sonic, naturally. It's probably why the Lego movie did so, I believe the Lego movie 2 did fairly well last year, or something like that, whenever that came out last. My kind of weird, like, grapple with this is, like, it has to please, like, the Sonic fans who are, like, my age and probably well over my age, and then, like, is trying to appeal to kids who, I guess, haven't really grown up with Sonic, and so it's, like, trying to do two things, and it's, like, who do you target to for your demographic? And so, like, I get that's a really difficult thing to do. It just, like, to me, it was just, like, Deadpool for kids, and I'm kind of sick of the Deadpool shtick a little bit.
Yeah, I get you.
But that being said, I am a little surprised it's as successful as it is, because when we have these movies come out, obviously the fan base is like, we're going to go see this. But, like, the fan base legitimately went to go mm-hmm. see this, on top of, like, yeah, it being more accessible to wider audiences, which is why I think movies like Tomb Raider, Warcraft, and Assassin's Creed did not make as much money, is because it limited their demographic. When you can appease kids, like, you can, you know, you'll make the money back. Families can go see it. Yeah. And I'm a little confused as to why this is doing better than Detective Pikachu, because I think on top of it being a far better film, it's Pokemon, and that's, like, it's a much bigger property than Sonic. So, like, I'm not quite sure what the case is there. Maybe it's because it's a less crowded market, which is what I'm going to lean towards, but it is really an interesting sort of situation we're seeing here.
I wonder if some of that is even that 40-year-old demographic. Like, I'm too old for Pokemon. Like, I took my kids because they were excited for it. I obviously have reviewed the movies too, but, like, I have no nostalgia for Pokemon because I just missed it. And my age now have the kids that can be Sonic, and we did grow up Sega Genesis. That, and it was, like, huge, that battle between Mario and Sonic in the early 90s. Chris, what do you think about why is it that it did so well?
So my argument is, we got to definitely mention, you know, the whole campaign, or what happened with the whole redesign. And I'm not saying the fan base went out just to support the redesign, because we know there was a lot of people complaining that we're never going to buy tickets to see this movie either way. But just that marketing push, and how many eyeballs got to be like, oh, there's actually a Sonic movie and there's a controversy going on. So one, it got spread out widely just from that. And two, why I think Detective Pikachu just didn't get the love that Sonic is getting is, one, that name, Detective Pikachu. Like, if you come out with a Pokemon movie, I think it would have made so much more money if it was called Pokemon the movie, or the live action movie, whatever, because you hear that title, Detective Pikachu, and it's an obscure video game in the Pokemon world. It was a video game made for the DS. So having that out there, even like you said, Sean, you're not the demographic, but I bet if it was called Pokemon and it had Ash and all them, you probably would have been more inclined, because that's a familiar side of Pokemon that you knew. Detective Pikachu, I bet you were like, Pikachu's a detective now? What does that mean?
When they announced it 2-3 years back or whatever, I was like, what? What are they doing?
Exactly.
Ryan Reynolds, what is happening?
So Sonic was just simple enough, where it's Sonic the Hedgehog the movie, you know, the blue guy, a mass appeal, then this outrageous marketing campaign that happened. I think just all the right cards were in place where this turned into a perfect disaster that ended up making it successful. Now, the second Detective Pikachu movie, which I don't even know if it got confirmed or not, I think is definitely going to make more money than this Sonic the Hedgehog movie. Griffin, do you think that?
Depends on when it's released. I get your point with the Detective Pikachu, but it's still Pokemon, and I don't think you could name that film, like, Bulbasaur, The Revenge of Bulbasaur or whatever, and, like, it would probably do just as well because it's the Pokemon brand. Like, people are going to see that film because it's Pokemon, and they love that sort of thing. I really do think Sonic is more successful. The more I've kind of, like, thought about it, it is more successful because of where it's released. I mean, they dumped it in February on Valentine's Day weekend. Nothing around it that is could possibly compete with it. And so I think had Detective Pikachu been in a similar situation, you would have seen that film do a lot better. Because that movie was sandwiched between Endgame, between Godzilla, between Aladdin.
Yeah, that was a busy month.
Yeah. So it's... yeah, I'm not entirely sure if I think that's the case, but like the only other way to test it is to drop, you know, the Detective Pikachu sequel in an empty month.
In February.
So one rumor circulating is that the whole bad original design was part of a conspiracy 4D chess to trick the public and to get people talking about that. You guys buy into that one?
No, I think if I'm a marketing person, if I work for Paramount and my two options were I messed up and I ruined the marketing campaign, or I can take credit for this conspiracy online, I'm going to take the credit for the conspiracy online to look like I was a genius the entire time. I don't think you can plan this out.
Right. Well, here's the other thing. One of the VFX branches based in Vancouver that worked on the Sonic and did the redesign, they had to shut down because they were overworked, and they you know, they basically ran that division into the ground because of the poor creative choices that the higher ups made on this film. So I do not think they would have done that as just a marketing stint, you know?
Yeah, we get real into the tinfoil hat zone of like you can't orchestrate this kind of thing because it can go so bad so fast when you're actively trying to get bad will from the people so that you can win it back and by like, no, that's not what you want to do. All right, let's move on to our next subject or next question of the day. And why is it that so many video game movies are so bad? And even if you've liked some video game movies, and I've of course liked some of them, but there's not one that's just a classic. There's not one that actually is like a great movie. There's some that are entertaining, can't be fun, nostalgia hits, but there's not that one that everybody agrees that is a fantastic film and it's based off a video game. Why do you think that is?
I'll let Chris answer this one because I want to find I did an interview with Daniel Pemberton, who's a composer of Birds of Prey, Man from U.N.C.L.E. and stuff like that, and he actually used to write tips for a video game column, so he's very like into that sort of world, and he said something really interesting that I want to pull up. So, Chris, I'll let you go first with this one.
Yeah. With me, I think a lot of the times studios treat a video game property much differently than they would like a novel, a book, a comic book, in where if they're adapting, you know, like the Suicide Squad or something based off a novel, they take as much detail, as much reference from that, plug it into their movie to make it work. Where a video game movie, it feels like they take the bare bones of what might make that popular, throw it in, and then try adding their own flavor that just divides fans. And it's meant for general audiences that aren't really fans of this video game to begin with, which is one of the reasons, you know, I came out having a lot of fun with Sonic, because while I thought it was just going to be made for a generic audience and not really service those Sonic fans, and then you watch it and there's so many little references and Easter eggs to so much lore in the Sonic world, you're like, they are actually putting in love in this. So that would be one of my answers, is that they should treat it like if it was a beloved comic book, novel, book, and just heavily inject it with some of that lore.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of that's sort of in line with what Pemberton said, and kind of what I agree with. He basically said that like he's amazed it hasn't happened yet, as I think all of us are.
Yeah.
He's basically said it's like a case of people trying to cram too many things into a film and not respecting the characters. He made an interesting case for like, you know, instead of trying to cram like, you know, 2 hours worth of lore and story into a film, why don't you take a scenario like a chase film? Like he used, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the film 71 with Jack O'Connell, but it's basically a giant chase film. And he was like, what if you made like a Metal Gear film that focused on like just one mission, and then like the sequel kind of goes on from there, and so you're building from that initial like ground up concept, and you make it really simple, but you make the characters feel like they were in the game, and you just create the world without explaining too much. I think a lot of the case with video game movies, they get into like just exposition dump after exposition dump of just like explaining the world instead of just letting it exist. Which there is a balance you have to strike, but yeah, I mean, it's just a case of the higher ups, the creative officials, really not understanding, you know, or respecting the source material, you know? Like Uncharted should theoretically be the easiest one to adapt. It's literally Indiana Jones. You can just rip the story from the games and turn that into a script, and there's your movie. And
I think that's almost part of the problem sometimes, though. Like with this one in Tomb Raider, those are basically Indiana Jones the video game, and so when you turn it then into a movie, then it's like, oh, it just kind of comes off like B-grade Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
True, but like to counter that though, it's like it does kind of come off like that, but it feels like they're not, it doesn't have like the excitement or like the globe-trotting nature that the games sort of have, you know? Like the games really feel like they play into, they tap into that same magic that made the Indiana Jones game or movies special. Yeah. Whereas like when you get the film adaptation, it's just like really confined and like it doesn't, you know, I don't feel excitement. It doesn't really know what they don't really know how to adapt it, I guess. It's totally weird because I even go to something like Assassin's Creed, which is another one that's rich full of mythology. And that's a case where they tried to do something different, but they were too reliant on exposition dumps. They just didn't really know how to, you know, tailor. And that's, listen, I'm someone who defends that movie, but it's just, you have to get someone in there who, like you said, Chris, and I think, which is a case with Sonic from my understanding, someone who's passionate about the material, someone who wants to give the fans what they want, and yet has a vision of their own.
I think part of it is a few different things. One is that a lot of video games aren't story or character based. Sonic, Super Mario Brothers, I mean, there's just run along, the plot is go rescue that thing over there, run through a level. And so to translate that, you have to flesh out a character arc. You have to flesh out a story that's not in the source material. And so by the time you flesh out this whole story, you can lose the inherent nature of the video game itself. The other one tightly associated with that is budget. Like to do Sonic the Hedgehog, where, you know, after watching the movie, I went home, pulled out my Sega Genesis, and then had 2 hours of playing Sega Genesis with those, my kids, Sonic the Hedgehog 2. And, you know, he's in pinball world. There's loop-de-loops everywhere. It's underwater.
Yeah.
You know, that's really expensive to translate. And trying to find a story that humans can connect with, where you just have Sonic running around real fast, you have to come up with something. Like the inherent nature of Sonic the Hedgehog, you can't just do that. That does not immediately translate. It's designed for the experience of trying to jump through things. And how do you make a story that's compelling? That really is tough and challenging. Same with like Need for Speed. Like, okay, let's just take a racing game and then flesh out this whole plot for the whole thing. And I think that's where you kind of lose what makes the distinctives of the video game in the translation. And it's not just video games. I mean, that's what the cliche with books is, oh, the book was better. Because something gets lost in translation. Anytime you translate from one to the other, it's really tough because it's designed for one medium and you move it to another.
That's one thing with Sonic the Hedgehog that happened. I like that you brought that up, Sean, because the writers of it were doing an interview about what the movie originally was looking like before you know it as well. And they talked about they had multiple Sonic characters, so multiple CGI characters. They were going to jump to different worlds, and you got a hint of that in the movie. They also had a second villain they wanted to implement. And then once it just got into the studio's hands, it became one by one, get rid of this, get rid of this, get rid of this. And it eventually turned into that generic one CGI character into the human world, making pop culture references. And
road trip movie?
Exactly. So I don't know why the studios go ahead and do that.
Right. Well, I guess the thing is, from a studio head perspective, it's they have to make this thing as mass appealing as possible. Whereas, like, you know, the filmmakers and the writers, like, obviously they want to please the fans of Sonic because that's your target demographic. Whereas, like, the studio's like, well, we want to get families in the theaters because we're going to make more money that way. So, like, I get where they're coming from. I just felt like the studio did a little too much, like, cutting away. Like, like what you were saying just there, I had not read that interview, but what you're saying about, like, the different Sonic characters, like, going between worlds and, like, getting, like, Knuckles and Tails and all these people, it's like, that to me feels like Sonic. This just feels like the Rocky and Bullwinkle kind of movie from, like, the early 2000s or 90s. And
I don't blame you,
I do not like that movie.
But I had fun with Sonic, but, I mean, that was my criticism on it. Like, you take all these big, flashy, fancy worlds, you strip all of that away, and you replace it with road trip cliches.
Yeah! And
Sonic acts like Sonic, but we're in a road trip movie, missing all the exciting, vibrant worlds. And that's frustrating.
it's like, you know, Detective Pikachu was able to give us the vibrant, like, extravagant world of, like, of Pokemon and stuff like that.
Hundreds so it's of like CGI they, characters, yeah.
Yeah, like, they really spent the time on being like, well, yeah, this is a, it's like a cute little caper for kids, but, like, we're going to give you the expansive Pokemon world that fans expect from this. And so it's like, I wonder why they did the same with Sonic. I have to go lean with, like, budgetary constrictions, because, like, I assume to, like, have all those, like, CG motion capture characters or whatever, like, would have been really expensive.
So, yeah, I think you put all that together where you're trying to translate something. And I think the other one you have to throw into it is, if this is the most one is ever open to, 70 million over 4 days, it's not, the track record says you don't make this a $200 million movie. And so immediately, this, it just puts so, like, many Terminator restrictions on it, and the success of this film kind of makes them go, okay, let's open, we can open the doors a little bit and loosen the purse strings and put a little bit more money into it. But I just think it's tough to translate it, and especially with such the nature of video games. How do you do that on a reasonable budget, move all the lore in, have an actual story, have the experience of playing the game? That's tough. With there's certain ones where it's a little bit weird, like Warcraft. There's stories there. Why did that movie not work? And it's almost like they put too much story in. They put too many characters in. Sometimes they have the other side to it, but I don't know. For whatever reason, they have not been able to crack the code. But let's end on a positive note. What is your pick for the best video game movie of all time? Chris, how about you kick this one off?
I mean, it is really obvious, and it's probably the most obvious answer, but I really do think it is Detective Pikachu, because while I agree, this Detective Pikachu is a far better film than Sonic the Hedgehog, the movie, but Detective Pikachu, I mean, it hit a trifecta, the first one, you know, where it pleased fans, it was doing okay with critics, it made money, and it even followed the lore of that DS video game pretty well. It had laughs, you had great character, fan service. I think, to me, that's the best adaptation, and a lot of video game movies probably taken a page from that film to, like, what can we take from Detective Pikachu and replicate it?
Griffin, how about you?
I'm going to go with a very controversial opinion. To your point for Detective Pikachu, I would agree that that's definitely the best one, but I struggle with considering a Pokemon movie just a video game movie because of the trading cards, the TV show, and stuff like that. So it's a little bit of a muddy area. So I'm going to go with Assassin's Creed, which many of you probably hate, but listen.
That's the fun of this, is that we can have someone come in and list Assassin's Creed.
Would you still say that if Michael Fassbender wasn't in the lead?
Good question.
Yes, I would, because out of any other video game movie that I've ever seen, this film felt like it was the work of someone with a distinct vision. Like, it feels like a filmmaker's movie, and the action sequences are exceptional in that. Granted, there's not enough of them, but, and I guess, is like, as an Assassin's Creed fan, this felt very much in line with the first game. It's a very, like, convoluted story. Not a lot of the stuff makes sense, but, like, you're kind of going along with it. There's a lot of exposition, the characters and the assassins and the Templars and stuff like that. I just found it to be enjoyable. I know a lot of people will say, yeah, it's, like, dreary, it's dull, it's numb, it did nothing for me, and I can't really fault anyone for that, but perhaps it's because I'm a fan of the franchise. I just felt like for every missed opportunity, it kind of won me over with, like, some of the creative choices they made. And the acting, the talent involved from, like, an acting standpoint, I think is unmatched when you compare it to any other video game movie.
For me, I did not like Assassin's Creed. to what you said before, one of your criticism of video game movies, it's too much of an exposition dump. And I don't like the video game, personally. For the same reason I don't like the movie, I think it's a weird story, and so I just can't connect with it. But
totally fair.
What's awesome is that you like it, and that we can have such different opinions. If we count Detective Pikachu, I think I'm going Detective Pikachu. It's a solid family entertainment blockbuster. If we're not counting it, I dug the Tomb Raider movie.
That was good.
It's not, like, to your point, it feels contained. It feels like it should be bigger. But the reboot video game from 2013, it's self-contained. It's like on this one island. It's not as much of a globe-trotting story. And still, it's not fantastic. It's like, oh yeah, it's a really enjoyable little adventure film. We don't get enough adventure films these days. Based on that criteria, it's the best video game movie ever. Then, you know, I grew up, with just nostalgia reasons, I have so much nostalgia for Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat because the early 90s, I'm getting into arcade games, and those are the two biggest there were, and then they came out with movies. And if you watch Street Fighter, knowing it's from the guy that did Commando, you suddenly can appreciate it a little bit more. And then Mortal Kombat's just some campy fun that's pretty goofy, but nostalgia for it. But you guys, what do you guys feel about Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat?
I have never seen Street Fighter. I've seen Mortal Kombat, the first Mortal Kombat, maybe like once. I think that's a thing where you just had to grow up with it, man.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Chris, how about
I mean,
you?
I'm surprised no one said the Super Mario Brothers. That's like the best one, right?
I did see that one opening weekend in the theater. And even as a dumb kid, I was like, what did I just watch? What was
Dude,
that thing?
That's just, I don't even know like what they were thinking with that. That's a scary movie. Yeah, that's like a very scary movie.
There's a bunch of videos documenting the backstory. It's bizarre how that movie came about and how they kept heading down this terrible path to create this awful movie. Chris, what did you think about Mortal Kombat and Street Fighter? Have you watched them?
I haven't seen Street Fighter. I did see the first Mortal Kombat. I probably liked it because I saw it young growing up with it. I think if I watched it now without seeing it before, I would not be a fan of it. But growing up and having the nostalgia attached to it, I really like it. And I'm looking forward to the new reboot. Like, there's a lot of video game movies upcoming. There's probably going to be more greenlit after this Sonic thing. I mean, we have the Uncharted with Tom Holland. We got the Mortal Kombat that's going to be rated R. There was another one I was thinking of, but I couldn't think of. Are there upcoming... there's a Minecraft movie as well. Are there upcoming video game movies you're looking forward to? Oh, the Super Mario with Illumination Studios?
Yes.
Jordan Vogt Roberts' Metal Gear Solid. That's the one that's number one on my radar. Okay. Radar right now. I think that's going to be the one. If they nail it, it's going to blow... The floodgates are going to open. Because that is just primed for a cinematic experience.
I'm curious about this Illumination Super Mario Brothers, and at the same time, like, Illumination, man, Mario filled with fart jokes. Why did they go with Illumination?
Yeah. That I think, Sean, sadly...
Or Minions making a cameo.
Yeah, I think we're going to get a crossover between the Minions and Super Mario Brothers.
They're going to lean heavily into the fact that they're plumbers, and all of the humor and scatological poo jokes out of that. Terrifying stuff.
I do have a question for each of you before we kind of close this out. What is the one like video game property that you really want to see turned into a successful video game movie?
Oh, do you have one, Sean? I have to think of mine real quick.
Yeah, I was debating if I should put this question here because I was trying to think through what it would be, and then now you've asked it. Now I have to actually come up with an answer.
I'm so sorry.
So
I'll throw one on top while I'm thinking of my big one, so you can think a little, Sean. I mean, I wouldn't mind a Crash Bandicoot movie if we're going with mascots. I do wonder if you should go the CGI animator route because Ratchet and Clank tried doing that where they went the exact same CGI style that they had in their video game and brought it into the movie theater, which no one even saw. But Crash Bandicoot movie, I wouldn't mind watching. I grew up with that. It could be nice for Sony.
I'm going to pretend as if we're in the year 2000 and the movie Wing Commander didn't come out, and so I'll go with Wing Commander. And like the source material, it has this whole story. And in the video games, Mark Hamill, they did like actual footage of him. It's got Josh Lucas, Mark Dacascos, all these big name actors that you recognize populate the video game. And then when they made a movie out of it, they got Freddie Prinze Jr. and Matthew Lillard to be the leads. And it's just like, what are you guys doing? Yeah. You have a worse cast for your actual movie than you did for the video game. Not to trash those guys. They just don't fit this property at that point in time. And so it like lends itself to be kind of like Tomb Raider is a B-grade Indiana Jones fun adventure. You could do that with Wing Commander as this B-grade Star Wars with Mark Hamill, or what you could do is get Freddie Prinze Jr. So that's one that kind of comes to mind. It just like seems like there's source material. Seems like we could be able to get a Mortal Kombat, Mortal Kombat, that's what we were just talking about. Warcraft, there should be a way to do that that works. Yes.
Yeah.
Twisted Metal movie with the Fast and Furious cast.
could work. And then... Duke Nukem, if we're in the year 2003, Duke Nukem seems just designed to be, because he's already quoting all the movies that I love from the 80s. Back in his prime and the early zeros, right on that, the wave of success of Duke Nukem 3D, you do it, you get the right person in there, and you just have fantastic. But all these ideas I just proposed are 20 years too late.
For me, I'll just make it brief. I just want a successful Assassin's Creed movie. That's all I want in my entire life. Just please, for the love of God, do that. If I can't have that, just remake Mass Effect for the big screen. There literally, you want another Star Wars, or you want like a, I guess it's more like Battlestar Galactica, but like you want like a big sci-fi space opera sort of thing, go just do Mass Effect. Like, come on, guys.
All right. Thank you guys so much for joining me. Griffin, where can we find you on the internet?
You can head on over to the Film Speak channel for movie reviews. I put one out recently for Call of the Wild, so if you want to hear my thoughts on that gem of a film, you can check that out. And you can also give me a follow on Twitter at Griff Schiller.
Chris, where can we find you?
Yeah, you guys can find me on Twitter at 3CFilmReview or on YouTube at youtube.com/3CFilms. Again, thank you for having me on, guys. I would love to come back.
And thank you both of you joining me. It's been a fun, this is a real fun conversation about video game movies, because there's a lot of juicy stuff to talk about there. If you guys are watching on YouTube, this is available on almost all the main places that you can find podcasts. There's actually a couple bonus episodes over there. If you head on over there, be sure to leave a review and a rating to help kind of grow the momentum that is this podcast as we're launching. And as always, keep talking and talking movies too much.